Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Last week was expected to be eventful with critical economic data, the Fed's FOMC meeting, the August 1st deadline for trade deals, and of course, plenty of Q2 earnings reports. The week did not disappoint, although in unexpected ways, which contributed to the S&P 500 falling 2.4%. So joining us on this Monday morning to discuss this all, glad to welcome back Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office, Jason Dreho. Jason, good morning. Thank you for dropping by and for spending some time this morning with our listeners. Welcome back.
Good morning, Dan. Happy Monday. Good to be here.
So, Jason, a lot to cover. Let's perhaps begin with the economic data and in particular the July payrolls report. What were the main details and what does it all say about the health of the economy at this time?
Well, this is one of the data points that I think surprised in unexpected ways and disappointing ways. Payrolls in July, rose 73,000. That was below the consensus expectation of about 110,000. But the real story was the downward revisions in the May and June jobs number. For June, it went from 133,000 to only 14,000. For May, it went to 125, from 125 to 19,000. So a combined total of 258,000 reduction in jobs. That's the biggest sort of 2-month revision outside, I think, of the pandemic that we've kind of seen in many years. These revisions are split between public and private sector. We know some of the data for June in particular was kind of funky because there was a big increase, or a big part of the job increase was related to education, which doesn't really make sense of hiring increase in education during the summer vacation season. One of the implications is that now the 3-month kind of average monthly job growth went from 149,000 based on April through June. Now May through July, it's down to 35,000. So kind of a much weaker number than sort of previously assumed. So overall, the story from the labor market report is that thoughts of things are holding up well. I think that takes definitely a bit of a hit, and that's why we saw the markets react the way they did. So it's, you're not cracking or like, terrible, but it's certainly, weaker than, us investors, the Fed had been assuming. Other data points last week also sort of pointed to some softness, such as like the ISM manufacturing survey. In the Q2 GDP report, the number was good, around 3%, but there's a lot of volatility in the first half GDP numbers because of swings in inventories and net exports were causing big shifts. The underlying private sector final demand, though, grew only 1.6% annualized in the first half. Which is compared to the past couple of years where it's around 3%. So consumption is also kind of slowing notably. And even outside of AI investment, the rest of investment is basically flat. It's not growing. So definitely signs of weakness overall. That weakness in the labor market report in particular is also why President Trump on Friday made the decision to fire the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics that's responsible for producing the jobs data. That's just a data collection, kind of process. There's no policy-making decision, so it's, a bit of a worrying sign that you're firing someone above the quality of the data when it's not necessarily their fault, perhaps. But that's kind of this, where we are right now. Again, a weaker picture on the labor market, and now there's actually more uncertainty about just perhaps the quality of the data we're going to get going forward, not only on labor market reports, but the BLS also produces CPI data. So I think this is just adds to the anxiety that investors have. Weak data, but also kind of questionable your direction ahead of, like, what's the quality of the data going to be like?
Yeah, some very interesting developments there. And if we turn now to the Fed, the central bank did not cut rates, which was the expected outcome, as we talked about during last Monday's episode. However, on Friday, this was interesting. Fed Governor Adriana Kugler resigned, and the weak jobs data begs the question of what's the Fed's policy path going forward. So, Jason, what's your expectation for the Fed from here?
Well, the Fed didn't cut. That was expected. There was two dissents, people who wanted to cut. That was also kind of expected. There was sort of perception after Jay Powell's press conference that he was a bit hawkish, but he did note 6 times during that the economy faces downside risks, under the tariffs will have a one-time impact. So at least you can interpret in that he is, just setting things up for the potential for rate cuts going forward. After the meeting, the market pricing for a September cut was, down to about a 50% chance. December was, through the end of the year, so through December meeting, it was down to about 1.5. After the jobs report on Friday, now we're at like almost fully pricing in one full cut for September and back to roughly 2 cuts by December. So the market definitely shifted based on the jobs data being weak, but also given now the possibility or the likelihood that we will get a replacement for Kugler quite soon. This kind of matters, just more in terms of perhaps the timing of how quickly the Fed is going to move. The expectation that we had, like a lot of the people in the market had, is that her term was set to expire in January. By the fall, the Trump administration would announce a replacement for that position, which normally wouldn't garner a lot of attention. But the thought was they would announce a person who would take that role, and that person would be the Fed chair in waiting and take over from Jay Powell starting in May. Now that Kugler has resigned, the Trump administration can announce a candidate within weeks, before the end of August. Still has to go through Senate confirmation hearings, but that role could be filled before the next FOMC meeting in September. And then you have a situation where the presumption will be that will be the next person will be the next chair. So you have essentially the current chair, and then for 8 months, sort of the shadow Fed chair, a person who will probably be more dovish than certainly than Powell. So in the near term for the rest of this year, it may not change the path of what the Fed's going to do, especially if the economic data warrants cuts. But it just creates additional noise or confusion if the other person speaking, what does it mean for Fed policy beyond the next May? What kind of policy frameworks are going to choose? What does it mean for a broad scope of Fed things for the Fed undertaking, which won't happen and can't happen until after May? So again, it's another thing that investors have to, may not change much, but it just adds a little bit more uncertainty of, what happens from here. And of course, the markets don't like that uncertainty.
Now, Jason, if we turn to trade, focusing on trade deals, some were reached by the August 1st deadline last Friday. However, for countries that did not agree to a deal with President Trump, tariff rates, of course, went up. So how does this impact the outlook for where tariff rates end up from here?
Well, there's maybe optimism in the markets after deals were announced with Japan and the EU on the prior Sunday. With the August 1st deadline looming, there's a couple additional deals, but a lot of things that actually didn't weren't reached, and therefore tariff rates went up. In general, these new higher tariff rates are lower than what was announced back on April 2nd, or the rates proposed in letters that Trump had sent to different countries earlier in the month, but they are generally higher than the 10% baseline that has been in effect since April. So there's trading partners that will have now a 15% tariff rate applied. That covers about 30% of imports from the U.S. Those above that 15% tariff rate account for another 20%. And countries, reign at 10% account for about 8% of imports. So, it definitely kind of takes it higher. There is a reprieve for Mexico. There's a 90-day reprieve before the tariffs go higher. That wasn't the case for Canada, where tariffs went up to 35% already on August 1st. But a large majority of the goods coming from Canada, are already sort of exempt under the USMCA. So it may not have a big impact, but again, it just sort of directly creates some uncertainty. The key thing to focus on is the effective tariff rates, when you apply it across all different goods, what is effectively the rate that's being paid for imports. Our base case is that it would settle around 15%. This probably pushes a little bit higher in the short term. The budget law puts it around 18.5% currently. Now, some of these tariffs ultimately could be negotiated down, like, for example, the ones with Canada. But it may be the case that, the economic data has to get worse, the markets have to get worse to sort of, incentivize, President Trump to want to lower things. It's a form of, like, announcing we got deals, therefore they can bring it down to, reduce the drag on the economy. So we still think ultimately it's going to end up in that 15% effective tariff rate, but the path there will probably be bumpy over the next few weeks, next couple of months, before it probably settles out before the end of the year.
So, Jason, if we end on the markets, was the decline in equities last week a temporary blip, or should investors expect more volatility and weakness from here?
Well, in our last house view update a couple weeks ago, we had one of our key messages, prepare for volatility. It turned out that that began the following week, and I think that's the reasonable expectation, certainly for the rest of this summer. It's not probably going to change in the next month or two. I thought the economic data is likely to get a bit worse. We're continuing to see some weakness on the labor market. The impact of tariffs is should start to show up more as we go into the fall, first with inflation data, and we get July inflation data on August 12th. So that's the direction of travel. I think ultimately until investors have real confidence that there'll be a slowdown in growth but not a recession, that things will start to inflect better next year. And you see policymakers pivoting, or what I would say is like they exercise their puts. Until that happens, I think there's at least some anxiety in the marketplace. I wouldn't expect significant downside. Decent pullbacks are probably going to be bought by the markets as the risk war becomes more compelling. We remain sort of constructive on the medium term, but I think the near term, this is the likely environment. Some choppiness, and maybe it will probably require policy shifts for investors to really become confident that it's a stormy seas, but it's not a economic hurricane that's going to really do significant damage. So kind of keep that in mind. So focus more on the medium term. Prepare for this volatility, focus from an equity perspective on sort of secular stories that are less tied to this, such as AI, and rates. I know rates kind of came lower on these growth concerns, but there's still certainly a risk that if things stabilize, the back end of the curve could end up going higher, especially if the perception in the market is that you will have a more dovish Fed that could lift inflation expectations going forward.
Well, Jason, very much appreciate the timely perspective, insights, given the interesting week, big week we had in the markets last week. And thank you very much for carving some time out of your personal travels this morning to kick off the week with our listeners and our clients. So great speaking with you, Jason, and look forward to continuing our conversation again soon.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.